Okay, shall we start with the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. First order of business is the minutes from the April 22nd meeting. May I have a motion to accept them with the one amendment?
So moved.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carried. Next is revenue reports. We only have two. Justice Sullivan Biseglia is $2,150 and the town clerk is $645.04. Do I have a motion to accept those reports?
Make motion for that.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carried. You have that, Christine?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Next up is correspondence. The first letter is from our Director of Parks and Recreation, Sandy, who is resigning in order to take a job as the Director of Parks and Rec for the county. Do I have a motion to accept the resignation with regrets?
So moved.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carried. The second one is a letter from our planning board indicating that the planning board concurs with us acting as lead agency with respect to the zoning map and comprehensive plan action. We don't have to do anything with that. It's just they're required to respond, so they did.
Al?
Yes, sir.
Just to authorize the town to be lead agency.
Pardon me?
Do we need a motion to authorize the town to be lead agency?
No, we declared our intent to do that. They're just responding, saying they have no objection. We would do that at the scheduled meeting, right, Jerry?
That's correct.
Okay. So that would be, I guess the 7th is when that, well, I don't know. Have we scheduled that actually?
No, we haven't.
Okay. So in theory, we could do that. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Not optimistic about June, honestly.
No? Oh, okay.
Well, Governor Cuomo's got the state shut down to the 7th at minimum.
Yeah.
We've
had long discussions with the county executive about which phases include what and when they're likely to be. I think public assembly kind of stuff is almost certainly going to be at least phase 3, and it may be beyond that. I'm not sure I anticipate that in phase 2. And phase 2 is probably going to be somewhere middle part of June. So
you're saying July today.
Yeah, I think that's far more realistic.
Yeah, that's
sometime
what it's
in July. So I think my recommendation would be to just hold off on this. I think this is one of these ones where when we schedule it, we don't need 30 days, do we, or do we?
No, we've already, I don't know. I defer to our attorney. I'm not sure.
No, I don't believe you do.
Yeah, I think it's a 10-day thing. So we can discuss that again at our next meeting. I don't think we have to take any action on that right now. Next agenda item is regarding the Noxon School Water District, and it's a request for a change order for $11,250, and it really has to do with releasing or retainage release for that amount.
All the money.
So the details are on there, you have in your package.
Yeah, right. And then it goes also $17,307.70.
Right. That's the retainage that they get back.
That's everything.
Right.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carried. Okay. The next one is an interesting one. We have a couple of projects that are in front of our planning board, which are requesting private roads. And as I'm sure you guys know, we don't actually have any private road standards sitting in our town code. And our team has put together a set of standards which they'd like to us approve in terms of a policy with an eye on eventually turning it into a law and adding it into the code. But in the meantime, this will allow us to have some sort of standards for the planning board to act on while they consider the applications. We understand that if we try to do this and put it into a local law, it may not get done in a time frame that would allow it to be used with the applicants. But if we adopt it as a policy, then it would be effective immediately, and then we can take it and codify it over the next some number of months. I would just mention that the people who worked on this are our highway superintendent, a director of public works. It's been cleared with the fire department and more or less at our town engineer and, well, pretty much anybody and everybody who cares about it. So
anybody's going to dig a hole someplace near
road. Right. And what it boils down to is ensuring that when people are putting in a private road, it will be approved to be somewhat narrower than the regular road in terms of the pavement, but the shoulders will be built with the same kind of subsurface that would be in a normal road. And what it boils down to is if at some time the town wants to take this private road over and make it an actual town road, it'll have been built in a way where we can take that and take it over without having to dig the entire thing up and build it from scratch, basically.
Yeah, it seems to me we talked about this a while back.
We've talked about it any number of times for the last 10 years at least.
Yeah, and never moving on making the law. Yeah.
Right, we never really did it. I think there's an increased interest in this with developments that are coming our way. And I think it's important for us to kind of get this stake in the ground. And then we'll work on making codifying it as well. So do I have a motion to accept the outlined proposal from our team as a town policy?
Yes, I'll motion for that. Accept it.
Second, Ed Jessupel, second Rich Ryan's motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carried. Okay, the next up is a letter from Hemp Productions. You have it in your packet. And as you can see, they're requesting that we consider amending or modifying the application fees for site plan. As I'm sure you're aware, site plan fees are based on a number of criteria, including parking spaces and a number of other things. But it also includes a fee for a per acre fee. And they are requesting that we consider, since the parcel is a 92-acre parcel, that we consider modifying it and using the building site of a third of an acre instead of the total acre. Do we have any discussion or comments?
I would say that I figure it comes to about $750, which is more than fair.
It's
for the whole acre.
Alan, I don't think we should be giving them a break at all. The town board has a discretion to do this if we feel this project is beneficial to the town. And I don't think this hemp farm is beneficial to the town, giving the outcry of the people at Dutchess Farms. And I just think it's a bad idea.
Gary, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the hemp farm is the whole farm. So they're only wanting to develop part of it. The whole farm part of the whole project, so it's not like it's just one little. If they were just doing one little piece of property, but the whole farm is the hemp farm. So what's the difference?
They've
in the site plan, but
for an acre, not the.
Wouldn't the site plan include the whole project?
Correct.
Like it was, you know, like the one thing that we talked to, they were only going to use like 3 acres used out of the whole project,
and the rest was going to be unused and remain. I see your point. I see what you're
saying. It's not that they're just developing one little section, but the whole thing is the farm. It's all part of the whole project. It doesn't make sense. Like a golf course saying, hey, we're only gonna do is use the bounce area, but the thing's a golf course.
Okay. So I'm guessing that you concur with Mr. Jessup.
Sure.
Richie, you want to weigh in?
Yeah, they're using the whole property, correct?
Yes. Well, the farm is the farm, yes. The site plan is for the processing facility, but yes, the farm is a single operation, I guess, yeah.
Acreage and using it, then you should pay for it.
Okay.
Did you want to say something, Joe?
No, I was just gonna say so Richie, we should have when you made part of your farm a farm district,
yes.
We should have charged you the development fees because you were developing part of it.
It wasn't development in it, but I got charged per parking spot and for the acreage.
Parking spot, yes. Yeah. We didn't say we wanted
to. I think you got charged for the full acreage.
Yeah.
I don't remember waiving that.
All right.
Kimberly, did you want to say something?
Yes, sir. Good evening, everybody. How are you?
Good, thank you.
All right. So I believe it was Mr. Jessup that raised the point that there has been an outcry from the community. I'd like to address that if I may, and then I'd go into why we should only pay for the portion that we're developing. My understanding.
Can I just ask you who you represent so I can put it in the minutes?
Oh, sure. My name's Kimberly Tanami.
Can you say the last name for me, please?
Sure. T as in Tom, A.
Uh-huh.
N like Nancy, A. M like Mary, I.
Okay.
And I'm the CEO and lead researcher on the Hemp Productions Project.
Christine, uh-huh. Her name is signed on the form. I'm sorry,
I wasn't aware of who she was. I apologize.
Okay.
No worries.
I knew where you're going, but her name is on the form that we're reviewing. So.
Okay, great.
Yep.
So I'll just make the point that we're literally disturbing 14,400 square feet of the property. We're not developing the entire site. And it was my understanding when I spoke with Jennifer O'Donnell that fee per acre is really applied to like a residential community complex or something of that nature. Here it's agriculture and we're just literally developing a third of an acre on the property. So it just seems fair that I pay for the acreage that I'm actually developing. That's one. Another thing is, you know, there has been an outcry from the community, from a small handful. I can count on two hands the individuals that are unhappy with our farm and its location. There's been a lot of misinformation that has been given regarding our property. I'll address the first and primary one, which is vital organic compounds that are being claimed that are produced by the cultivation of hemp. Just to give a little bit of background, industrial hemp, for every 1 acre of hemp planted, it cleans 10 tons of carbon dioxide from the air. And the gentleman at the town meeting that brought this point up, I believe he was a physicist. And all I'm going to say is, shame on him because he didn't compare apples to apples. He used a study from a greenhouse effect in an urban environment for the cultivation of marijuana. We don't have any greenhouses on our property. And the way that, and we're not doing marijuana, we're doing industrial hemp, it has no THC. And the purpose of our research is really regarding the homeopathic remedies that CBD provides for a multiple amount of ailments, from PTSD to epilepsy. I mean, the list just carries on. With that said, the cultivation of hemp actually does the opposite from what was claimed by this individual. It pulls carbon dioxide from the air and it actually makes the air cleaner. That's one. Another thing that this individual had posted, he was talking about the pollen from our plants that were, you know, creating adverse health effects. Every plant planted on my farm was a female plant. There was no pollen produced. So that was another piece of key information that was incorrect. I just want to give you guys a little bit of background. Before I selected the farm, I reached out to the town planning board for a blessing, so to speak, and just to make sure that the town was comfortable with my project. I would never invest $10 million into a property and into a project where I wasn't welcomed into that town. So I reached out to the town planning board to get their blessing on my project. We had a couple issues when it came to the building of our pole barn. And I went to the building department several times to confirm what the proper approach was for this second structure that we're looking to build. I was given permits. And then on January 22nd, there was a meeting, town meeting that was held. Again, a ton of misinformation. Everything from us not having permits back to the Viatol organic compound topic. And I was informed that the town was coming to shut us down for illegal operations. And I reached out to one of the board members here, and I gave him all the information, you know, showing that we had permits. And two of the things were already complete, which was the pole barn and the blasting. And then about 3-4 weeks later, they gave me a stop work order on the basis that they needed to confirm who the regulator of industrial hemp was. Now, Mr. Bell put out a public notice on September 24th, clearly indicating that the town was fully aware of who the regulator of industrial hemp for processing was. So they gave me a stop work order when it failed to shut down my project on the basis that I had no permits. They still found a way to give me a stop work order on something that they already did their due diligence on. And when it came back again that Ag and Markets was the regulator of industrial hemp for processing, now they're telling me I need to do a site plan review. So it's kind of like we're working backwards and it was an afterthought. So the issue, let's put aside the 20-year fee that you guys are trying to charge me. That is the least of my problems. My biggest problem right now is I am about to lose my crop. And the town is being unfair. And the very fact that it's an afterthought that you want me to do the site plan review, which I have no issue doing, but it's going to take 3 months to complete it. And some of the town planning members on this meeting, technically there's a bias to them approving my project. They feel that their home value has been depreciated. They don't like the smell of the farm. Granted, I can't control the smell. It's for about 6 weeks during the bloom process. But at the end of the day, guys, you have to really ask yourself, what if I had 1,000 pigs out there? I mean, what would you prefer? It's a farm, guys. I can't control the smell. And that's the only thing that I can accommodate. Every step that I took in this project, from the fencing I put up to the location of the pole barn, where I selected to put the processing facility, was with care to my neighbors. We are over 2,400 feet from the road, behind a tree line. And the reason I selected that slot, that site, versus the 14 acres that I have on, what road is that?
Hillside
Lake Road, is because I'm trying to be a good neighbor, at a site out of mind, so to speak. And yes, there is a smell for about 6 weeks during bloom, right before we harvest. But outside of that, I've been a great neighbor. I've cleaned up over 200 acres of farmland that was disgusting and it was abandoned. And what the town is doing, I mean, listen, I took all the right steps. I reached out to the building department. I asked how to approach putting up this building. I was completely transparent. After that January 22nd meeting, when you guys couldn't pull my permit because, couldn't shut me down because I didn't have a permit, you took away my permit on a foundation that you guys already did your due diligence on. And now you're asking me to do a site plan that is literally putting my crop at risk and I'm going to lose it. So the only thing I'm asking the town is to do one of two things. Either expedite the site plan review or not do it. And I have no problem. It's a very simple, I know there's been a lot of gossip. I am literally going to have between 5 and 10 employees. I'm not going to have semi-trucks coming in. I mean, it's a very quaint research project for the greater good of finding homeopathic remedies that will knock out the pharmaceutical industry. And when it comes to industrial hemp, I have proprietary information and research that we're doing. It can solve our whole greenhouse emission effect. There are so many beautiful benefits to industrial hemp. This is what our forefathers used in everything. George Washington was the largest hemp farmer in the nation. And I know that there's a lot of misinformation. I know that, you know, it's in the cannabis family associated with marijuana, but it's not. There's no THC. You can't get high. I have 5 children and I want them to be proud of what I do. And I wouldn't involve myself with marijuana. So I'm asking you guys just to be fair with me. And I have no problem, you know, having a follow-up meeting or doing an informational meeting prior to the site plan review. I will give you third-party evidence and research documenting that my farm is in no way a negative environmental effect to the community or causing adverse health effects. I can give you third-party research that verifies that. And outside of that, there's nothing more I can do. I'm just asking you guys to be fair with me. And my spiel is over.
When you said that you've been told that it's going to take 3 or 4 months for the planning review process, did someone tell you why that was? Is it because of the various processes and public hearings and that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, Jennifer informed me that there are certain protocols and procedures to a site plan review, which are justifiable. So you have a 30-day stretch before the initial review. And then after that, you know, you have to confirm that you guys are going to take on being the lead agency and that SEACR doesn't need to get involved and that there also needs to be a public hearing. And that takes an allotted amount of time in order to execute, which is 100% understandable. The only point that I'm raising is, being that the site plan review is kind of an afterthought and there is serious financial harm that's going to be caused to me, I'm asking that in the bare minimum that we expedite it or some discretion be applied and you reach out to Ken McLaughlin, because his whole point to doing the site plan review was for life, safety, and egress. But the site plan review entails a lot more than that. And with mine in particular, there's a full environmental assessment being done. Now, I submitted a preliminary copy for Jennifer to review. And just upon her initial review, and to make sure I did it right, she sees no environmental effect. And that's just preliminary in conversation, nothing in stone. So Ken McLaughlin has one reason for doing it, which is simple, and I think falls in line with the building inspector end of it. But the site plan review has other elements to it. And, you know, another point that I'll raise, because I'm looking to do things the right way and be transparent, I reached out to the DEC in October, and I did a jurisdictional review with them for this project, and I got the thumbs up from them. And again, I've been completely transparent, and I've tried to do everything the right way, and you can confirm that with Ken. And again, I understand that there's been a lot of misinformation. I have no problem doing any type of public service to speak with the community about my project and about the environmental benefits that hemp farming actually causes to the community. And I will provide third-party research evidence to support that. I'm just looking, in short, to be a good neighbor, get my project done, not lose my crop, and move forward. And I'm just asking the town planning board and everybody involved to be fair with me. And if you look at the steps that I've taken, I've done the right thing all along. And you know, a lot of gossip goes on at these meetings that doesn't necessarily get verified, and it creates like a lynching mentality. And perhaps, you know, just so you know, I'm looking at a house across the street on Rita Lane to buy. If I thought there was any health effects from my farm, I wouldn't be potentially moving across the street. But I'm willing to give you guys whatever you need to make a fair assessment. I just really need you to be fair with me and somehow find a way to resolve this within the next 30 days. Otherwise, I'm going to lose millions of dollars. This is a $10 million investment. Because it's a very impactful research project. I was able to get that funding. And we're going to be helping everyone from veterans with PTSD to older, to people that have Alzheimer's or issues with memory. I mean, it's significant, and it's going to have a very big impact. I'm also the agricultural chair of the Smart Congressional Initiative. We report to Congress, and we give recommendations, and we are partnered up to do DOD research on the fibers. With hemp fibers, you can create anything from nylon or plastic, but it's actually good for the environment, and it's biodegradable. I mean, and there's so many beautiful things about it, but I won't be able to do any of it unless you guys, you know, approve my research project and the building of this second structure. And it was never intended that I only start now to do processing. I have my crop in a 20,000 square foot building that is not climate controlled since October. And I was supposed to have this structure up and running 2.5 months ago. And all it is a 14,400 concrete slab with the placement of 50 by 10 modular pods that get anchored to the slab and connected, basically. It's not something serious. And that's my project in a nutshell. 14,400 square feet with modular pods that connect to one another to allow me to process my crop.
What do the modular pods do?
What do you mean, what do they do?
Just explain to me the processing. I'm just curious. It doesn't really have a whole lot to do with your request, but I'm just curious.
Well, initially we're connecting 8 50 by 10 modular pods. One is the intake portion, because it's GMP. Our facility will be GMP certified and of pharmaceutical grade. We will be one of, or if not, the first in New York to have these quality standards. And the reason that we've spent so much money on the building and for these certifications and our equipment is because in the next 6 to 18 months, this is where the industry is going. Right now, you might see CBD products on shelves, but the majority of that raw material is literally done in like a garage with no type of standard. So they're connected in a way to be compliant for the GMP certification. And it also, the reason we chose this type of structure, well, it was for two reasons. It was the midst of winter and we couldn't get in the ground and build a structure. So we said, how do we get a structure up sooner than later? So we went with the modular pods, but it also allows us to expand very easily. So right now we start with 8, and once, you know, we maximize that capacity, we'll introduce like another 3 or 4. So it allows expansion in a very methodical way to allow for like whatever our demand is at that moment. And our goal is to be a producer of the raw ingredient and sell to all like the big box retailers like Walmart and CVS, because they're going to soon be coming out with their own products that are CBD infused. So we need to meet their standards, and we do so by having these good manufacturing processes.
Okay. each of the pods are the same as the other pods, so that you have a number of them for capacity. They're not, it's not a sequential thing where each pod does a different part of the process?
No, actually it is. Each pod does a different part of the process. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I have a question. Are you processing only what you are growing?
Yes, that was the initial step. The initial step was I need to process my crop immediately, and that was what I reached out to the building department for. But down the road, once I have proof of concept on this structure, at some point we would like to make it, I don't know if you would categorize it as commercial. When I spoke with Ken, that's how he would deem it, but we would like to have the ability to bridge the gap within the industry and process other farmers' material. Yes.
So then it does become commercial.
Yes, but initially?
Because as far as I understand it, an ag district is allowed, you're allowed to do anything on the property that you are growing. But if you're bringing in product to process, then that's a whole different story.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in my case, I was not afforded that opportunity. So the building department was well aware, and I have emails with the deputy and the inspector where I basically told them, I want to put this modular pod structure in place so that I could have the ability to process my crop. If I get proof of concept and the setup works right, then I was instructed that the next step would be to apply for a commercial permit. And what you said, sir, is correct, but that opportunity hasn't been afforded to me. And I am about to lose my entire crop.
Okay, I don't see why that happens. Okay.
Is there a place, where would you have to go to get yours processed? You said there's no place in New York State?
There's two that I know of, or one. But they're not GMP, so I wouldn't be able to serve my target market. Plus I would have to pay an obscene amount of money in the millions. And I have my equipment and everything sitting in my pole barn. I have my buildings that are waiting to be delivered. I mean, I have been put on a hard pause. I mean, you guys are, listen, I am an open book. You guys can come inspect my farm, look at my equipment.
I was there.
Who's that?
Richie.
Oh, hey, Richie.
Yeah, I was there at... No, last year's crop's still there. She's not processed it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't think the purpose of the agenda item tonight is to deal with the planning board issues per se. It was simply to review your request for a fee reduction. Has anybody changed their mind regarding that before I respond to these concerns?
The only thing I think of is that I believe I figured it out. It's $750 per acre. So all the acres that aren't grown, that are used for processing or used for housing and such, should pay the fee. But I don't know. I don't know that the ag district rules talk about charging for all the growing areas.
How can you guys charge me for the development of agriculture? I mean, I'm not developing, I'm growing, I'm a farmer. So farmers are supposed to pay per acre to farm? We're talking about a site plan fee for the construction and development of a parcel. And if I'm only developing under an acre, I think a 1 acre fee would be fair and applicable. It's site plan development fee, not a farming fee, plus site plan development fee. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
But if you're
We really need to deal with two things here. The first is the fee, and the other is all the other observations, which I'll volunteer to look into with our planning and zoning folks tomorrow, because there is some of that I was unaware of. So I want to have a conversation with them tomorrow, and I understand the urgency, so I will do it tomorrow. Regarding the changes in fees, I had Ed and Richie and Gary all saying that they wanted to stick to what the fee schedule is that we applied to site development. Any of the three of you changed your mind?
Hey, Richie.
Yes, I mean.
How did you feel when you were charged a site development fee?
Disgusting. Yes.
So I'm asking you to accept the same courtesy that you would want for yourself.
Yeah, we.
So this is done on an individual basis. We're not creating a precedent here.
Well, that's the problem, right? The fee schedule is the fee schedule, and at some point, judgment just turns into. You know, something that's arbitrary based on each individual project, and that's the whole point of having a fee schedule is so that you don't do that, right? So that it's consistent and it's applied equally to all applications. That's the flip side of the argument.
Well, Miss O'Donnell, she was the one that brought this to my attention. Mm-hmm. She said the site development fee was intended for complexes. When they're developing a full site. She said that's what that fee was intended for. So at the end of the day, the truth is my adjacent parcel is 343 acres. Oh my goodness, what if I decided to put the building on that parcel right now? Can you imagine the fee that I'm going to incur for disturbing a third of an acre? That's 343 acres. I mean, what if I had closed that parcel? I don't know, guys. And we're farmers. Come on, you guys know farmers. We're not rich people.
You're more than farmers. What did we do with the distillery?
I don't remember the distillery getting any fee reductions.
Okay.
I don't believe the distillery did either, Joe.
No, I don't believe we reduced any fees on the distillery.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a consistency of.
So that's an interesting analogy because they're growing, grain and so forth that goes in, and their processing building is relatively small. So that's fair.
So why don't we look at that and see what we did?
On wetlands and everything.
I'd like even more.
Yeah, and my parcel is full of wetlands that I can't even disturb. So thank you for raising that, Richie. I think I have over 50 acres worth of wetlands that I can't even do anything with, you know?
You still pay taxes. Everyone pays taxes on wetlands, and you can't even touch them.
Hey, that's okay. But I mean, to charge me a site development fee on something that I'm not even permitted to develop, I mean, listen, maybe we can come to a happy medium. Charge me what is not wetlands, you know? Again, gentlemen, my biggest concern is the expedited review, and I know that's not what this meeting is about. But if with balance...
I'll look into that.
Okay. But with balance, you know, I can't do anything with the wetlands. So I don't...
Everyone plays on them. It's sad, but everyone pays on the wetlands.
No, I'm not talking about... I'm talking about the site development fee.
Correct.
Yeah.
I will mention that I wasn't crazy about this project in the first place, but I don't think we should be unfair. Since I live across the street from it, it's
so. What do you think is fair, Joe?
I was thinking, you know, if you're going to charge her for the acreage that's being like that has buildings on it, that has the building that she's presently have buildings on it. That area there that they're using for the business processing should be paid for. And there again, you would certainly take off the wetlands. Other than that, if you want to do the whole site for a charge, okay, you take out the wetlands and that's it. But otherwise, figure out what being used that's not being planted on, and charge them for that. I didn't mean what charge them for wetlands fee, but the processes where they're not growing. That's my thought.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle there, where it's not just the land that's being, because the barn is, the processing part is just part of the whole farm. That's the whole thing, just like the guy doing the...
So I think I hear somebody suggesting that instead of the total acreage, we ought to take the total acreage minus the acreage that is wetlands.
That's one of your thoughts, yes.
Gary, you're okay with that?
Yeah, I would think so.
Rich?
Being used.
Yes.
Rich, is that okay with you?
Yes, I would agree with that.
All right, so do I have a motion for that?
Can we have it just spelled out exactly what you want me to write, please?
Modification of the fees, site development fees, to change the number to be based on total acreage of the land, and to change it from that to the total, essentially buildable acreage. Total acreage minus wetlands.
Minus wetlands. Okay, got it.
Kimberly? What?
Yes?
Do you know how much land is non-wetlands? 363 acres?
It's out of 90.
You're
out of 90.
Yeah, this is the 92-acre parcel. To be honest with you, I think it's in the ballpark of 50. But I'll double check, because we have the big pond that runs through it. Yeah, you guys
That's
can.
Okay, we'll check and calculate.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you will.
All right, so do we have a motion for that, please?
So do I have a motion for that?
Motion.
Who is that?
Richie? That was Gary, I think.
Rich?
And do I have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And Kimberly, I'll talk to Ken tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Let's see. What else we got? Next on the agenda is an acknowledgement of changing Dwayne Hicks' position from a full-time clerk to a part-time clerk. This is Wanda's clerk. And we're changing the position from a full-time clerk to a part-time clerk effective back to April 16th. He hasn't been in the building in a while, although he'll be coming back next week with most of the rest of the staff. Do I have a motion to acknowledge that?
Thank you.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Was that who seconded it?
Richie.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Those deep voices get me confused. Okay.
The last item on the agenda is that the annual MS4 Speedies report is available. There's a link to it on your agenda, and you can review it and read it at your leisure. This is just the annual report we get each year.
Okay.
Committee reports. I assume that there are. Let's just go through them and say, does anybody have anything to say about any of them, since I assume our committees
are. I did go to the virtual CAC meeting on Monday.
Okay.
And they're talking about things like, you know, they have a tree planting that's coming up. They have, they're looking at replacing a bridge that's approximately, wait a minute. I shut off all my lights. Now I can't read my paper. 5 foot by 30 foot. The only thing that confused me was they were talking about pricing. I think the last one we did was like at no charge at all, but I don't know what they're looking for. They might be looking for an upgrade. And I and that was not clear. And they're also looking at the planning board, perhaps adding to parking lots that they have stations for the electric cars. That's one of the.
So they're requesting that we evaluate, or the that the planning board consider requiring charging stations in parking lots for projects.
Yes. Yeah. Where there's a parking lot, there should be.
My recollection is that there's a state regulation that covers that.
Okay.
But I'll look into that. I for some reason or other I think that there's a regulation that says a parking lot that's above a certain size requires some number of those. But I'll find out about that.
Okay. And then
I don't think the planning board has the teeth to be able to require that without us considering making a change to our code. So I'll volunteer to first of all look if there's a state statute that already covers it, and if there's not, I'll look at some other towns to see whether they're doing it.
And they are trying to do a survey. They've already sent out 16 questionnaires, of which they received 5 or 6 back. I don't know what the questions are. I have not seen it, but that's it. Thank you.
Yep. Anything else from anybody from the committee reports?
The salt shed is looking good. Has everybody seen the salt shed?
Yes.
It is. Yeah. They were pouring cement earlier this week. I don't know whether they finished yet or not, but the walls have been going up. So it is. It's coming along quite well. For those of you in Florida, just so you know.
What's that?
For those people in Florida, I'll just let them know that, you know. It's
I've been getting daily photos.
Okay.
I bet you won.
You're only one of 10 people.
are there any town board comments?
Well, we had wanted to talk about overlooking the Dunkin' Donuts thing, Al.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll do overlook.
Okay.
This is a little strange wrinkle in this. Overlook, you may recall, we processed an amended PDD, and they've gotten they've been in front of the planning board and gotten conditional approval for their amended site plan. Because that amended site plan changed the number of total units, the fees for recreation fees are going up by $16,000. They have requested that instead of paying those in order to close out and get the site plan signed, whether we would consider allowing them to pay that when they get the CO for the barn. Now, the barn is not what this amended site plan is oriented toward. It's a new building, and the barn is almost done, and they anticipate they'll be getting a CO sometime in June. But the reason they're asking for that is when they get the CO for the barn, that triggers the next round of loans from the bank, and they'll have the money to pay off all their existing loans and apparently these fees. So they've asked us to consider whether they could pay them then instead of in order to get the approval signed. The only problem I see with that, $16,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money to wait a week for or a month for. But the only question I have is, and I thought about this earlier today, honestly, is that's sitting in the planning board resolution as a condition for approval. It sits right in the resolution that they voted on. And so this may be a Jerry question. I'm not sure the town has the authority to tinker with or tamper with something that's sitting in the conditional approval resolution.
No, you don't. Only the planning board can modify that.
Yeah, so, and that's not going to do them any good probably because they'd have to wait. Well, the next planning board meeting is tomorrow night, so I suppose they could request it.
You know, they're doing a nice project, but
I agree.
They're certainly nickel and diming us. I mean, they got the tax break. Now they got a break on increasing the number of units. Now they want a break on paying fees. You know, when do you stop?
But Joe, they're not looking for a break. They're looking for like a 1 month extension. You were just willing to give up $24,000 in fees to give them up for good. And these guys want to have I don't understand if you understand how businesses work, but with the real estate section right now, people are screwed. And I know
I was in business for 20 some odd years. So yeah, I understand. It's not a,
you got $10 million
it was a small business.
The last project.
I understand how it works. Okay. But I also, when I was in business, I didn't try and milk all those people that allowed me to do the business until they ran dry. You know, how many things are they going to ask for? What are they asking for after this? And how many things are we going to give them?
But they're for 1 or 2 months extension, but you were willing to give up $24,000 in fees like that. You just said they're charging for the building.
No, I wasn't willing to give up any. I'm not willing to give up any.
In the beginning on the hemp thing, they just charged.
What I am willing to do is be fair and reasonable. This person was asking that, you know, how come I have to pay these fees on property I can't plant on? And I thought that was a fair question.
She wanted to pay for 1 acre. That's what she was asking for.
Yes, but that's not what happened, was it? That's not what I
right, you
that's
said,
not what I allowed. Was
again, you said, I think they should just pay on what you said it was like $700. Isn't that what you said?
I per acre, $750 per acre.
Okay.
And what we were discussing is how many acres should we charge her for.
Okay.
I wasn't giving her back all that money.
The problem is the last ag application we had was for the distillery, and we charged them full rate for $100.
Okay, right, so now we're off officially off topic, guys.
Yes.
All right, let's return to the discussion here, okay?
Thank you.
Let's return to the discussion. The last I heard was that we don't have the authority to delay those payments at all, only the planning board does. So correct. I guess the question I have for you is, how would we feel about sending a letter to the planning board saying that we don't have any objection to them delaying that payment until the CO for the barn is done, if the planning board wants to entertain it?
I would have no problem with that.
No problem.
Richie?
No. I would have a problem with that.
Gary, no problem?
No. Delayed.
It's delaying it, right, by approximately a month, whenever they get the CO. It'll be before they start construction or get the building permits for the stuff.
You're assuming they're going to get it. They're going to get a CO in a month.
That building is well under construction and almost done. And the one that's being approved for the amendment hasn't even broken ground yet. How about we do this? How about we say that we need it as a condition to issuing the building permit for what's been approved?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Let me clarify what I think we're voting on.
You can
vote on it, okay.
All right.
Okay.
I believe what we're voting on is sending a letter to the planning board that they consider modifying the conditional approval for the project to change the requirement of the rec fees payment in as a condition of final approval to changing it as a condition for the issuing of the building permit.
Of the barn?
Of their approved.
Issuing the
approved amended building. The barn has already had a building permit for months and has been under construction for quite some time, is almost done.
Okay.
So do I have a motion for them?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Joe. And Ed, I think you seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Carried. What else did you say we wanted to talk about, Ed?
We also had the Dunkin' Donut kiosk and the drive-thru law.
We have received a request from the Dunkin' Donuts suggesting that their business has obviously dropped off since school's closed. They also suggested that they've had some issues with some of their customers not wanting to actually come in to the facility and purchase things when school is in session because it's crowded with unruly teenagers, let's say. And so they are requesting that we consider allowing them to have a kiosk drive-through type thing in the back of the facility that's that operates similar to what the credit union does. Now, as I'm sure you're all aware, our current code does not provide for that kind of a facility to be approved in town center for food services of any kind, basically. And so if we were to entertain allowing that, I think what we're being asked to do is modify the standards for drive-throughs in the town center to allow food drive-throughs in addition to non-food drive-throughs.
I'd motion for that.
I'll second Richie's motion. But
well, wait a minute. No. We don't vote on anything that we don't have in front of us. So we'd have to determine how we'd go about making that changes. But it sounds like somebody wants me to pull together what that would involve so that we can consider it for a vote.
I don't.
It's obviously going to take a change to the law, and I need to evaluate just how serious that is. For starters, I'm going to have to look at the comprehensive plan. So
I will say this, and I think it's going to be obvious to everybody, is I would be against the kiosk, number one. And number two, it is a pre-existing non-conforming situation now, and you'd be making it worse if you...
I'm not sure what you're talking about. This is Dunkin' Donuts, not McDonald's. So it's not a pre-existing non-conforming condition because they don't have one at all, right?
Okay, they don't have a drive.
No, not at all.
It's a conforming use.
Right. In any event, I'll see what's involved in that, and we can talk about it at our next meeting. I don't know that it's going to be particularly complicated to do it if we choose to. But we do have to figure out how we go about it. In particular, I want to make sure that it doesn't involve a comprehensive plan update, because that would obviously be a whole lot more involved.
My continuing concern is that the board doesn't undermine the whole master plan.
Understood.
Alan, in regards to what we've been going through with the COVID-19, I think we have to be proactive and try to help businesses any way that we can, because everything is now is starting to become takeout. And I think the drive-through law, I think we need to look at very carefully in town center and change.
I understand.
100%.
I really think that's pretty lame to bring in a national, a worldwide pandemic to change what you think should be allowed in the town center, which was... which was created to be a hometown kind of place to shop,
right.
not a drive-through area, and every opportunity has been taken for those businesses that are in the town center to serve those people who are having a problem being able to sit in a restaurant or a place to eat. They can go there and get and pick up their food and go eat someplace else. So I think that's really lame to come up with this.
Joe, what the future is going to be, though, is instead of takeout being a side business, it's going to be a primary business now. I read a lot of magazines and online, and what they're going to do is have people are going to order their food, pull up there, but they want to buy a better food than going through McDonald's. So they're going to pull up to a nicer restaurant, pull up to a kiosk. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, I haven't read anything like that.
Okay, then what are you reading? You don't read
all over.
You are the only person that I've ever spoken to who is in favor of this drive-through law that we have. You're the only person. Everyone else that I've spoken to is so opposed to it, and I'm not using the coronavirus as an excuse. I just think we have to adapt, and if we don't adapt, we're going to end up losing businesses. They're going to go out of business. We must be proactive, and it is not a lame excuse. It is a reality of the situation.
How many people that have complained to you about the drive-through live in the town of LaGrange?
Almost everybody who has complained to me is town residents.
Obviously we talk to different parts of the town, because most of the people.
I hope so.
Most of the people I speak to who live in, who I know live in the town of LaGrange.
Really?
Are very happy with the town center and hopefully, hopefully want to see it grow in the way it was planned.
Well, I think if you polled the board, you would be surprised. You'd probably get a 4-1 vote on this.
Okay. So who said the board always knows what the town people want?
We're elected by the people.
Their job.
Exactly. As am I. So I speak for 16,000 people. And a lot of people call me and send me letters and notes about what they like and what they don't like. And obviously talking to people who don't like it. And their voices are louder to you than they are to me. I'm sorry.
Richie, you've been in the town your entire life. Have you heard anybody in favor of this drive-through ban?
Everybody. Everybody that I've talked to, there's no one been against it. I haven't heard anyone against it, to be honest with you.
Against the ban, or clarify what you just said.
Against not having drive-throughs. McDonald's, 70% of their business is drive-through. I mean, that's what's going to keep Dunkin' Donuts either alive or dead. If you don't give them a drive-through right now, I know they're going to leave the area.
Yeah.
So Rich, I just want to make sure I understand you correctly. You are for repealing the drive-through law in town center, yes or no?
I'm for it. I want drive-throughs.
Okay.
Yeah.
You need them for people to stay in business today.
Well, yes. As I said, I'll see what's involved, and I'm sure this discussion will repeat itself.
You think so?
Yeah. Any other comments from the town board?
No.
Anything from the town attorney?
No.
Would we like to open this up for public comment? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Public comments. Anyone have something they would like to say?
Yes. This is Norm Dean on Dr. Fink.
Okay.
I sent a letter to the planning board and also copied the town board. Did you receive it?
Yes.
Okay. The issue when I applied, or when Cindy and I sat with you, you specifically, you did a wonderful thing. The board did post a placement on Dr. Fink, and when they were there, traffic speeds and not traffic, but traffic speeds did go down.
When we posted a sign or when there were police?
No. We're waiting for the speed limit, but you did post a policeman or you asked for a favor.
I see.
And it worked when he was there. However, reality is they can't be there 100% of the time. And now even school is out. And the letter will show you some photos. It'll show you the traffic when school is in session of the buses literally turning on Freedom down Dr. Fink, left on Freedom to join 55 and take a right going west on 55. You with me? There's turn signals showing from cars and from private vehicles. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the issue this time is, believe me, we truly appreciate it, but it's gotten worse. And when I say it's gotten worse, it should be better because there's no traffic from the school that you would think. However, the main issue here is the access onto Dr. Fink from either the school or coming in from Dr. Fink to avoid the traffic circles. And when they come down Dr. Fink in both directions, they're going 50, 60 miles an hour. And you have a letter signed by everybody that lives on Dr. Fink, two people that live on Lauer because they crossed over Lauer. And the reason it's only two, because I only went out for a couple hours, to be honest with you, okay? And I explained the situation, and they go, oh yeah, by all means, we'll love this letter. So my request is to consider closing access, not closing, altering access onto Dr. Fink and possibly Lauer. Now, the planning board, the letter was addressed to the planning board because at the moment, there's a construction plan to take the old, not the Crystal, the Crystal property.
Next
and
to
have access in and out directly opposite my driveway. Directly opposite. The hard part is you can't get out. There's no line of sight. If the buses are there, you can't see the guys coming from west to east. And if they allow you out, and the kids don't let you out at all. And again, the major thing, you think it's the kids, it's not just morning and afternoon traffic. It's after practice of whatever sport it's in season. It's band, it's any extracurricular activities. And everybody trying to avoid the roundabouts. And when they're doing that, they're speeding to make the time to save a couple of minutes. And it's absolutely nuts. Otherwise, people wouldn't have signed it. Now, Gary, I see you're wiping your eyebrow. And I mean, come on, I've invited you guys to check this out. This is the pandemic time. Everybody's supposed to be locked in, and we still have speeding. I showed you burnout marks in photos. Okay? Has everyone seen those photos?
No, we got those. We received that package this morning, so I don't think
okay,
anyone.
Okay, my mistake. Alan, my mistake.
I'll forward it all to the board. I just didn't get a chance to do it before tonight's meeting.
It would just be a, it can be considered next month because I don't think school's going to start. But the biggest issue is the traffic, avoiding the traffic circles.
I want to make sure I understand what you're asking. Well, first of all, I want to ask what you mean by avoiding the circles. Are you suggesting that people who are westbound on 55 are turning right onto Dr. Fink and then flying down Dr. Fink route to avoid going through the two traffic circles?
That's part. The other part, and the ones that really want to do it, is they jam through the school. Speed bumps or not, they'll turn first going through the school entrance.
Yeah. Now explain to me how Lauer Road is involved in this, because I'm not sure.
What happens if they're not turning right and they're trying to avoid the traffic circle at the gas station?
So they go through that intersection and then go down Lauer and make a right and continue west on 55.
Yeah, one guy I talked about or I talked to said, yeah, my mailbox has been taken out 2 times.
Okay, I got
it. Mine's been taken out. We've lost animals. We don't want any kids. My son got hit once in the truck. He was, turning in.
Getting mail out of the mailbox.
You hear Cindy.
Okay.
All right. So it's a serious concern. You have, if it's not 100%, you've got 90% of the signatures of people that live on Dr. Fink. To Joe's comment, these are residents. Okay. And in addition to that, there's 2 businesses across the way in Freedom Center, only because I only went to 2, which was Dr. Bright and also the physical therapy thing upstairs, Moriarty. And everyone's saying, this is insane. Okay. So I don't know what it is. I don't know what the solution is. I designed shoes.
35, that's very high.
Yeah, well, the speed limit's one thing, but I don't think that's going to stop the guys that are doing.
Yeah, we've submitted a request to the state to reduce it to 30 because that's as far as we can really go. But if they're driving 60, that's clearly not going to make a whole lot of difference. And if it's a large number of vehicles, that's not the problem either. So.
Yeah, it's the rice rockets that are going down Dr. Fink
and
motorcycles.
Motorcycles.
Alan. So that yeah. Consider. Sorry.
Remember, you and I took a ride up outside this gentleman's house on Dr. Fink sometime last year. Remember?
I do. Yeah. I'll talk to Mike about what are our options. I know that the logistics or the legality of trying to limit traffic on public roads is controlled to some degree. You can't simply For example, you can't take a public road and say it's only usable by the people who live there or things like that. But I'll ask him whether he has any suggestions on how we might be able to reduce that.
The other consideration that I might add is there are places that are specifically closed by a gate. And the gates are controlled and emergency vehicles have access.
Right.
Okay? It's simply closing it and having access in case of emergency. Okay? That happens off Congress Road, happens, I'm trying to think of all the rodeo road, if you will,
the thing that
Stephen Page, you know, so yeah. there are possibilities, and as long as you can, actually, it would do another thing, it would make the school more secure. So the traffic, if they did come out, simply go through Dr. Fink, then turn onto the bus traffic I'm talking about, would turn on Dr. Fink, go straight out Dr. Fink, excuse me. Cross Dr. Fink, go to the old Dr. Fink, and then turn right onto 55. In other words, they would close right at the old Chef property.
The bridge.
With the gate being at the bridge. That would alleviate people turning to avoid and gaining 2 minutes of their time or whatever it is, to avoid the circles.
I'm
just trying to think about it because it's really two different accesses, right? You're talking about not allowing them to go through the school property as well as not going to Dr. Frank, right?
Okay, and then also having the entrance exit for this on the Crystal property is a little bit crazy because it's at the moment it's a Route 55 address. There was no in and out of but I mean, to the gentleman that's building the, and I've talked to him, he in planning board, I think on the Zoom, and I stopped by his house and he also had his mailbox taken out. Okay. So it is an issue of speeding cars and traffic.
And noise.
Okay. Does everybody get it? Joe, thank you very much for being concerned all these years. All you guys do a great job. We just have to find a solution.
Okay. Like I said, I'll talk to Mike about possible solutions.
Yeah, and again, stop by the house, whatever. We can explain it further.
You can hear it.
Yeah, and you can hear it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You're helpful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Anyone else?
My name is Stephanie Lewison, and I would like to speak.
Okay, go ahead.
Christine, can you see my name on the Zoom? Yes. So I don't have to spell it? Okay, yes. Thank you. I just want to say thank you guys for having these meetings by Zoom. It's certainly more convenient for me to be able to attend. I can have dinner while listening to it. So one of the nice things that can come
or
out
even
of
drink a wine.
What was that?
Instead of even drink wine.
That's exactly. I have a couple of comments or questions about a few different topics.
Sure.
Being that I haven't participated in too many of these sorts of meetings, I have two procedure questions. I was able to see the agenda online prior to the meeting, but it sounds like there was additional information that the board members had about each of the specific items, and I was wondering if that is something that is available to the public prior to these meetings so that we can also review the contents rather than just having a quick agenda, like so that we could actually see, you know, what the different requests are, what the different revenue reports, all those sorts of things.
Well, the revenue reports are listed
on the agenda.
And they don't really have any other detail behind what the actual number is. So that's the answer to that. Christine, correct me if I'm wrong. Anything that's listed as an agenda item, which means we'd be voting on, there's usually supporting documentation for those,
always,
right?
Always. The only time we don't have supporting documentation is if somebody brings something up in town board comments.
Yeah, during the town board comments or the general discussion sections, there's not necessarily going to be any kind of documentation at all. And if there is, it's not necessarily in the hands of all of the members. So that if we're discussing something and you don't have anything in front of you, it's perfectly possible that not all the board members have anything in front of them either, because the idea behind it is it's just a general discussion we're talking about. We're not actually acting on it. If we're going to vote on something, typically there's something in front of us to actually vote on.
And understood. That's usually
provided in the agenda.
So how would we see that supporting documentation?
What supporting documentation are you looking for?
You said that for the each agenda item, there is supporting documentation. So how do we as members?
If you print out or you look at the agenda, everything's in there, including the letter from the planning board, the recommendation for the change order on Knox on School. Yeah.
Christine, I just wanted to comment. I know in previous, and again, given the current situation, things may change. In the past, the items have always been available to the public. If they came in, we have always typically posted the agenda with any resolutions that are there, and not necessarily the backup documents for every other agenda item. So I don't know if the board would like to consider changing that moving forward and having the full packet that they receive posted.
Oh, okay.
My take is if there's a document that's included as part of an agenda item that we're going to be reviewing and considering, that should be available and posted as well, unless there's some reason for it to be, impossible because it's too big or something along those lines, right?
Okay. So we can discuss, and moving forward, we can change that. Again, yeah. I know in the past we've fully done resolutions. But yes, we can talk about that.
Yeah, certainly while we're in this mode, we're gonna need to have that available electronically. Although my inclination is to think that's a good idea to continue there even after we go back to the physical meeting.
Okay, will do.
Just so you know, on the website, I mean, just before this meeting, I downloaded the link to the agenda, and it's just 3 pages long. It does not include any.
I apologize. That's not what I got. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Kelly is correct.
Thanks. Okay. I appreciate that. We'll work on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Another procedure question. I know that you're not the planning board, you're the town board, but for the planning board, same kind of thing. Is that something that we can see what the planning board is going to discuss prior to those meetings?
That has a different set of challenges because frequently the items that are going to be in front of the planning board can be complex sets of plans, and those are a lot more difficult to make available that way. Now, that said, they're doing their planning board meetings electronically, which means they have to have electronic copies available for them to look at, I believe. I will talk to them about that.
Okay, thank you.
The challenge in the past has been that frequently you're talking about architectural plans that are on sheets of paper that are fairly large. And if you try to shrink them down and make them available electronically, they might not be all that useful because they'll be so small you won't be able to read them. But I'll talk to them about that. As I said, they're reviewing them electronically because of they're using Zoom, and so there have to be some sort of electronic copies that they're looking at. So I'll discuss that with them.
Okay, thank you.
That's a good question.
I've been to meetings with the town of Poughkeepsie Planning Board, and they do have a way in this actual PDFs that you can actually click on each agenda item and then it downloads the packet. Yes, it may take a very long time if it's like a large set of plans, but they do have some sort of technology that allows you to see it.
Okay.
Moving on, I do have a couple of comments or questions regarding the hemp facility. Yep. I am a resident of the neighboring Duchess Farms neighborhood, and I did want to say to Miss Tanami, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, point, she said that she can count on two hands the number of people that are concerned with the farm. which I would interpret to mean less than 10. I will say that there were 70 homes here in Dutchess Farms. Many of us have attended meetings. There's at least 75 people on an email distribution list. There are certainly more than 10 people that have an interest in the facility. Pro or con, just saying that there are, you know, more than 10.
You're correct in saying that there's more than 10 that are interested in what's going on. I'm actually on that list. I did attend the town meeting. But I know that there are roughly 10 people that have put effort towards, you know, slandering or misrepresenting the effects of our farm. So I'm not saying that there's not concerned parents, even schools. You know, I know that, you know, come September, October, you know, when the wind blew, they were smelling what appeared to be marijuana. And, you know, there's a stigma behind that. And I understand that. I'm a parent myself. So there's a concern, but there's about, what I meant was there's 10 people that are really running hard to misinform the community and create a panic. With regard to health, you know, adverse health effects and affecting the environment. My goal in the next 2 to 3 months is to, you know, God willing with the COVID, you know, have an event or two where, you know, we can educate the community on the many benefits of industrial hemp. So I guess what I was really saying was I can count on two hands, 10 people that are really running hard to create a concern that really doesn't exist. And yes, it is up to me to educate and inform, be available to answer any questions to the community. And, you know, I've been at the town several times. I told them that they can give out my personal number, the business number, and we're available anytime to assist with all the phone calls that the town was getting about the hemp farm. So, you know, we'll do our very best to provide that educational information. But at the end of the day, you know, anyone that's concerned, and if you want to put a group together, by all means, I'm willing to come out and speak and present, you know, third-party research that industrial hemp actually benefits the environment and there's no adverse health effects to it.
Thank you for clarifying that. I just wanted to say that, I mean, I've been silent for the most part in all of this. And I'm kind of relying on those handful of people to try to further our interests as far as, you know, our concerns regarding the farm. Yes, I think all of our interests or concerns are buried, and that's kind of difficult, but I'm glad that you're willing to have some sort of educational events or, you know, just be more open, because from my perspective anyway, it hadn't seemed like we'd really heard from you guys too much, so I welcome that opportunity.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I then have two questions that perhaps you can comment on. Not really knowing too much about this processing facility, except for the fact that obviously you guys didn't have it last year, I'm curious to know why it is that you're saying that if the processing facility cannot be completed on schedule, that it would make you lose your crop, because last year, you know, you had your crop, you just didn't have a processing facility, presumably had to put it off site. So I'm not sure why you would actually, quote unquote, lose your crop if you didn't have this facility this year.
So our business plan, what it included was a farm to table product. And the goal that we had set forth in the first 12 months of acquiring this farm was to cultivate in 2019, take the crop and the biomass that was grown on the farm, dry it, and then process it into an end product. And what happened was, even though we had permits, we weren't allowed or permitted to actually construct the building, which is another story in itself. So right now, my crop is sitting in a pole barn. And once the heat comes in, it's going to begin to degrade, it can mold and spoil. So if I don't get the processing facility up and running, I'm going to lose all that crop, because the pole barn wasn't meant to be a climate controlled environment, because typically with this agricultural product, the moment you harvest it and after you're done curing and drying it properly, you would immediately want to process it. But because the processing facility is not there, we don't have the ability to process it. And in the industrial hemp industry as a whole, across the country and even worldwide, what you have is many growers and a great demand for that raw ingredient to create products, but there's very few processors. So if you do any like statistical research into last year's grow, you have more than 60% of the farmers sitting on their biomass right now because they can't sell it because there's not enough processors to bridge that gap. And I myself, you know, I'm supposed to be the processor, and if I don't have the ability to process my crop, that's why it's going to spoil. So it wasn't a part of the plan to be delayed in building the processing structure. And that's the only reason why it wasn't there sooner than later. Okay. And this is also why.
Not having the education component, not necessarily understanding that it's last year's crop that you're referring to. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay.
And I guess another education question then, is the actual processing of the crop something that would adversely affect the smells? Like, would it increase smells again to be processing it?
There is no smell whatsoever.
So, okay.
Yes, yeah, there's no smell.
Not going to increase by actual processing anything on site.
Absolutely not.
Okay. That is it for my questions. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Other comments or questions?
I'll make a motion to close the public comment session.
Hey, I'm sorry, guys. Just one. This is Dieter. How are you? Good. Just wondering if you had a chance to find out any of the details about the Rossway Road cell tower.
Can I call you in the morning on that?
I know Alan said he was going to look into it as well.
Yeah, he and I talked. If it's okay, can I give you a buzz in the morning? Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Anything else? I believe I have a motion to close the comment period. Do I have a second?
Gary, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carried. One last thing before we adjourn. I'm going to send all the board members a letter that I've crafted that I want to try and distribute to business owners in the town of LaGrange. It's kind of a combination letter to let them know that as we're reopening through these phases, if they're encountering difficulties, to give us a call and let us know if we can assist them. It's also kind of a fair warning that as we reopen through the phases, things are probably going to have some bumps and things may be delayed and not work to go back to working the way they did instantaneously, and asking for their patience a little bit. And lastly, to let them know that the county has given me some limited number of personal protection equipment, which is just a fancy way of saying face masks, and asking if they need them to contact us and that we can distribute it to them. So by way of this discussion, I'm going to send you the letter and ask you how it reads and whether you think it's good, and also ask for your assistance in helping me hand carry them and deliver them to some of the businesses, that at least the ones that are open right now, and maybe if there are outside mailboxes, or we can put them under the door for the ones that may be opening relatively soon. I'd like to do that as well. I just want them to know that we're here for them, and we'll try to help them in any way we can as this phased reopening. For those of you who don't know what the phases are and how they're going to occur, the first phase is reopening manufacturing, construction, wholesale businesses, and allowing retail businesses to open essentially the way restaurants have. That you can order things and pick them up curbside, but you can't go in the building. That's phase one. Best guess by the county is that phase one is going to happen sometime probably around the middle of next week. Phase two is basically most services businesses, and that means everything from dentist offices and real estate agencies to nail salons and hopefully people who cut hair and and that sort of thing. That's phase two. The way the phases are working, they're roughly 2 weeks apart, but they're also based on the data that they're tracking in seven categories and a complex formula that honestly I've looked at and think I understand some and others are still kind of puzzling to me, but I understand the difference between green and red. So I know that we're close and hopefully we'll be getting there for phase one. The second phase potentially would be 2 weeks later, and that would be somewhere roughly around the time of June 1st. That's if the data continues to improve and if the metrics allow it. So that gives you an idea where we are. Phase three is restaurants. And what I haven't heard yet is whether phase three of restaurants is going to be full operation, 25% operation, 50% operation. There hasn't been any guidance or any kind of real definitive information out of the state on how that is going to progress. I think most people expect that it will not be 100%. It will be, they will be able to open and serve and have to maintain some sort of social distancing within the business. And whether that means every other table or something just hasn't been outlined to us yet. But that's where those things are coming. Recreation, assembly, all that kind of stuff is phase four, and everybody thinks the earliest that might happen is July 1st. The one thing that I don't know about that is whether that includes our public meetings and that kind of thing, or whether there's some in-between thing. And I'm going to get clarification on that probably on the next call that I'm on with the county, which is tomorrow. The county's been really excellent. They've been having regular conference calls with the mayors and supervisors anywhere from 2 to 4 times a week for quite some time now to keep us posted and understanding where we all stand with this. We did get some guidelines or at least some questionnaires about opening the camp on the town camp and Freedom, and our rec department is in the process of reviewing all of that and I guess determining how we feel about the requirements and whether we think we can actually open up the camp in any reasonable fashion. And what I mean by reasonable fashion is if opening the camp makes it seem a little bit too much like a punishment camp instead of a fun camp, I'm not sure we're going to want to do it.
When is the summer camp supposed to open up, Al? Like the third week in June?
Is that earliest anyone is thinking about that is July 1st.
Okay.
But the reality is we haven't gotten the guidelines on what you would need to do that from the state yet. And so most towns, as well as a lot of the private camps, honestly, are a little bit panicked because if they're going to open, they got to start planning. And in many cases, that costs a lot of money for them to get ready, and they don't really know what they need to do. And an example I'll give you is normally before we open the lake and get things open for our camp, we do a lot of work with the beachfront, and it costs a lot of money. And doing that and then finding out that we can't open it up is something that we're very hesitant to do, honestly. And that's what everybody is kind of clamoring for. We got some suggestions on yesterday. And as I said, the Parks and Rec people are reviewing it right now to see what it looks like. But the feeling I'm getting from most towns is that they're thinking that actually operating their camps may be a bad idea. They're concerned about requirements of providing safety. I mean, they're asking questions like, are you planning on checking everybody's temperature when they come in? And how are you going to handle a situation if one of your camp counselors tests positive, and on and on and on and on. And at some point, all of that begins to sound like is what you're creating actually going to be a fun experience for the children? And if it's not, then why are you doing it? That's the kind of discussions that are taking place among most towns right now. So, but I'll keep you posted. I think we're probably going to have to be in a position of making a decision on that very sooner rather than later. And by that, I mean probably no later than next week. but I'll let you know where we stand with all those kinds of things. Okay. I don't have anything else, so I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Carried. Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
Stay safe and take care.